Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of The Mandalorian from Disney+. Now, we may also wind up spilling the beans on whatever we may know, obviously, about the Star Wars trilogies, the trilogy of trilogies, plus the other couple of movies like Rogue One or whatever, and some of the related TV shows. But we'll stay focused predominantly on this. Going in, I knew it was focusing on a Mandalorian.
I didn't know what a Mandalorian was.
A Boba Fett. Bounty hunter. Guy with a armor.
I mean, I figured it out pretty quick, and I'll give them credit for that. But Mandalorian wasn't a term I was familiar with.
Okay, it was one that I was familiar with. The other thing I knew, because it was impossible to avoid, was the child.
Now, see, it's funny you phrase it that way.
I specifically did not phrase it as Baby Yoda, because it's not Baby Yoda.
But everybody said, but you know about Baby Yoda, right? I mean, you weren't able to avoid that spoiler.
And to me, it was a spoiler in a very real sense, because I went through the first, at least episode or two, trying to figure out when in the Star Wars timeline this took place. And because the reference of Baby Yoda, I was thinking, well, Yoda was known to be, you know, 900 years old or whatever. Therefore, it must be way before any of the trilogies.
I was trying to figure out if this was actually Yoda's backstory, or if this was truly the Mandalorian's story for the first episode or two.
Well, there's the question of, is it Yoda's backstory? Is it somehow Boba Fett or Jango Fett's backstory or something like that? Because they easily could have said this is Boba Fett leading up to the first trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go that way. And this is set like 5 years after the end of the first trilogy. But that's one of those things where not just the leak of information, but again, those spoiler aspects, instead of coming at it cold, had we watched it the minute it aired, you know, we would have had a different impression, I think, with, again, no spoilers, than we had coming in, you know, well after the fact.
Yeah.
And I don't think it, like, tanked my response to the show or anything.
No, but it upped my confusion level about where, when and where it was set.
It definitely colored my perception of the first few episodes, because I was trying to figure out not only which Mandalorian is this, how is it, or is it related to Boba Fett, but again, the whole Yoda thing. Because the only character of Yoda's species that I recall was Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that having been said, there were a couple of places in the prequel trilogy where there were some younglings and stuff like that. Maybe we saw another of his type.
Well, and it's funny you mention that, because there were quite a few points throughout the series where the Mandalorian goes to walk somewhere, and I'm like, dude, have you ever walked next to a one-year-old or two-year-old? Do you
have... They're running to catch up.
Yeah! And I'm like, do you have any idea how much slower you need to be walking for those tiny little legs to be keeping up?
I almost want to see, in the second season, him wondering how the kid is keeping up. And when he's not looking, the kid's kind of force floating.
I was going to say force hopping, but yes. The kid's using the force to get him there. Because...
Well, and the child is like 50 years old, but it's a slow aging race. And it, I don't know, it kind of didn't work for me in so much as, again, not knowing Yoda's species' natural lifespan. But if that's like 900 years, maybe they age 10 times slower, but then this should have been a 5-year-old.
Yes.
So clearly that's not the case, but at age 900, he was generally coming across as a frail old man at times.
Yeah.
And granted, he wasn't, but I was also surprised how the child doesn't speak, may not be able to speak yet, seems to understand some stuff, though,
mm-hmm.
but has exhibited the force levitation power, healing, the force choke power, and Trying to think what else we saw. Those may have been the only things. But he has a natural ability with the Force.
Definitely. Definitely.
And the term the Force, I don't think was ever used in the season.
No, it was not.
Jedi was used at the end.
Magic Hands was used.
In Magic Hands, that was kind of funny.
And I got to admit, there was one scene where the child is found, where he's kind of been hidden in this little, somewhere between a room and a cupboard on the ship. And the child has no idea what to do about this threat that's approaching. So the child lifts its hand, like, I will do, for lack of a better term, Magic Hands things to you, and you will not attack me. And it almost had the look of, you know, you are not the droid that wants to attack me.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. I'm not the droid you're looking for.
Yes, you know, and then suddenly the droid, like, not quite explodes, but some sparks and fiery things, and the droid falls over. And I loved the way the child looks at his hand.
Like he'd done it, yeah.
Like, I did that? And then he looks back, and there's the Mandalorian, and he's like, oh.
The choice to use a puppet was a good one.
Yes.
And the effectiveness of the puppet was amazing.
Oh, it was. Yes. And
that character never spoke, but the child was a key... Well, I mean, not only a key character, but look at the makeup of the two characters that are in every episode.
Yeah.
One is a puppet, one is a guy in a suit with a mask, you know, a helmet, faceless mask over him.
To the point that at times it seemed like the actor couldn't figure out where to put.
When he was using the visor scope thing, yeah. He seemed to be unclear.
He's like, I know where my eye is, but there isn't really a big enough opening in the mask to put it there. So at one point he kind of lines it up with one eye and then just kind of puts it in front of the center of the mask for the other eye.
I'm trying to remember which episode that was, because I think it was the Sanctuary episode. The actor wasn't in there, and it was one of the body doubles.
Oh, that's interesting.
And there were one or two episodes where it was a very action-heavy one or something like that, and it's like, okay, I get it. But the fact that it took until the end of the season to even see the character's face.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, moderately early on, he's explained, I don't take the helmet off in front of others. We're hiding out on the planet with the fishing village.
Yeah, but then as soon as he's done saying, no living person can see my face.
Thank you for bringing the food and leaving it in the hut so I can leave him eat in private.
As he's eating in private at the window facing all the kids.
Yes.
I was surprised we never had a scene on his ship of him kind of picking up the helmet, putting it on with that kind of... We see the helmet, but the head's out of frame or something.
Yeah.
Because I really would have appreciated if they'd addressed earlier on, he does take it off to eat and some stuff like that.
I don't feel they did a good job establishing the size of the ship, where what was on the ship.
I had thought they had, but then near the end, where they're going from one planet to another and they've got three of these big creatures in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, where did they have room for that?
Yeah, well, and it seemed to have room to quarter four or five people.
I don't know if it had room to quarter them or just for them to be on board. I would have liked a better sense of the size of the ship.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like you. In the beginning, I thought I understood the size of the ship. And then we took on the people to go rescue the business associate who ran awry of some others.
But to me, that's like you've got something that's a mobile home-sized ship. You can have a couple of people in there for a little bit, but you can't have...
Three horses in the mobile home?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what animal to use, and I was thinking more, you know, I don't know, hippopotamus or something, because the whatever they were huge.
Yeah, they were.
So, that bothered me a little, but it didn't bother me as much as the Jawas having disassembled the thing, and he and his friend put it back together in a day or two, and it's still space-worthy.
Okay, here's my thing. If anyone ever strips my car of parts because I park in a bad neighborhood, not only do they have to return the parts to me, they have to put the parts back where they found them.
I was kind of wanting, in all of the shots of it flying through space or whatever, after that, to have this one panel that was just kind of rattling.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that or he wound up with an extra nut or, you know, some piece left over. But the fact that it was space-worthy surprised me. it was a Western sort of mindset show.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
You know, with the, here's the village we've got to protect from the invaders, or mm-hmm. we got to do the jailbreak. I was expecting kind of the heist at some point. You could argue the jailbreak is kind of sort of that. And he has to, you know, go in and act as the pseudo-sheriff sort of a thing was kind of how I read the opening for him finding the child.
Yeah.
And it worked on all of those scores.
Well, and it was surprisingly episodic. There was definitely an overall arc. It was definitely one big story, but each episode stood surprisingly well on its own.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Each had its own little mini beginning, middle, and end story. They were clearly consecutive. They were clearly building on each other. But even if you didn't have that overarching, you know, flow and just watched any single episode for the most part, I think you'd be happy.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much they spent on this show, because a lot of it is gorgeous space scenes or incredible effects and stuff like that. Plus the sets, the costuming, the stunts.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't hold back on that. And I appreciate that. But we'd been hearing about a Star Wars TV show for, I'm going to say, about a decade. And there was a point at which I think they could have done it earlier, but I'm kind of glad maybe they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some great sci-fi shows of yesteryear that the story absolutely holds up. The effects, the CG stuff, maybe not so much. But that's to be expected.
Yeah.
You know, and I will be curious if shows of the modern era like this ever hit that point.
Mm.
Because even when you look back at, like, Star Trek The Next Generation, that still holds up.
Yeah, it does.
You look at Babylon 5, which was concurrent with that, and that was a lower budget show. It was a smaller technical setup and stuff. And while I still love the show, matter of fact, you know, we watched it recently and such, and I think it holds up, it's also aged visibly.
Mm.
But that was around the time they were going from standard definition to the widescreen, high def type stuff in terms of, you know, do we film it this way? Do we film it that way? Well, and it was low enough budget, they filmed it kind of the old way.
As I recall, they did more effects.
They did virtual sets.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Now here, how much of it was virtual, how much of it was real, I don't know. And I was commenting, I think when we were watching the first episode, that I think one of the hardest working people was the set location guy.
Yes.
Because they found some just beautiful places to film.
Yeah.
Now, where they did this, where they found the stuff, I have no idea. And I do think that's why we went back to, what was it, Navarro or whatever it was, that planet, a couple of times.
Well, and that was one of the, for me, interesting things kind of looking at the whole set of episodes in terms of, okay, like when we watch the CW DC shows, they say they're going to be about this hero, and then suddenly it's a team show.
Did you consider this an ensemble show or not?
In the beginning, it was the Mandalorian's show. I mean, he teamed up with this guy for an episode or this girl for an episode, well, but it was really his show.
For a loner, he's got a pretty big supporting cast.
Yeah. And then we get to a point where it's, oh, you know what? If I teamed with everybody I've teamed with before, basically, not quite, but close, I'd have the team I need to go to the town square at high noon.
Yeah, I thought bringing a few of those characters back made sense.
It made perfect sense, but it made me wonder if they were setting us up to be an ensemble show season two, but I didn't feel they did that.
Well, no, because at the end, they'd killed off a couple of people. Next season, obviously, we get the Mandalorian and we get the child. That's a given. That's the DNA of the show.
Yes.
They could bring back, if they wanted to, the girl.
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune. And Carl Weathers' character.
Yeah, Grief something.
Yeah, horrible with the names on the show. Sorry.
Well, and they didn't tell us the names very often.
Yeah. Those two could come back. They could recur, but they would not be regular.
Mm-hmm.
The other characters I expect to see again either next season or after that, Ming-Na's character, who seemed to die but then seemed to not die at the end, maybe?
Yeah, see, that's where I was on her.
Somebody was walking over her, and it's like, why?
Yeah.
That was a tease, so something's going to come of it. I just couldn't tell what.
Yeah.
So that was a little weird. But then also, the jailbreak episode, most of those characters that survive.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, they could come back. But also...
Particularly the three that were in the brig.
Yeah, but... Yeah, because the other two were, yeah, having problems. But there's also Moss...
The Moss...
Gideon, maybe?
Gideon, yeah. Definitely coming back.
Yeah.
He's, I think, the big bad for the series.
Well, by episode 7, I was wondering, okay, did they sneak an ensemble in on me? And I just didn't notice. But then by the end of 8, I was like, no. They just proved that you shouldn't be afraid to ask your friends for help when you need it.
Yeah. The other character I expect to see next season for an episode is the doctor or scientist guy from the beginning.
Yeah, because we let him live.
He was protective of the child and has knowledge of the child, which the Mandalorian needs to go figure out where the hell he's taking the kid.
You know, the funny thing, though, is, you know, it's got another season at least, we think, maybe two.
I think they may have filmed the second season, because I was seeing it could air as early as October. But I don't know how far they got for filming, for effects, all of that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I've heard they're working on a third season.
Okay, so let's fast forward. Whenever the final episode is.
Of the whole show.
Of the whole show.
Whole series, got it, okay.
Don't care how many seasons it is to get to this
point. What's the end game? How do they close it?
I kind of want to see the Mandalorian go back to the planet with the village and the fishing ponds.
I could see the finale of the series being him finally delivering the child, absolving himself from his responsibility, and the child relieving him of the responsibility. Then him going to the planet with the fishing village, finding the lady, and taking the helmet off.
Yeah.
I could see that. I'm not going to say they definitely have to do it that way, but that's the trajectory based on first season that I see.
Yeah. Because they've given him a mission, but they've also told us there's a place where he could live, quote, happily ever after.
Yeah.
If he wanted to. Now, in terms of, they gave me a nagging question. It plagued me for 4 or 5 episodes, and then they dropped it, so I almost forgot it. The tracking.
Yeah. How do those trackers work that the bounty hunters have? Is it a DNA tracker? I don't know.
How many of those tracking fobs are out there?
Presumably an infinite number, and ones that it felt like could be created or replicated on demand.
Yeah.
So the parallels to almost like the fugitive. I was going to say the prisoner. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, that's wrong. The fugitive, where you're constantly being chased.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, this show has similarities to the A-Team.
Hmm.
Guy comes in to save the day. Sometimes he's got friends, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, but they're also being chased, so they can't stay around and enjoy having done the good deed.
Mm-hmm.
They got to move on.
Yeah, but they also make friends everywhere they go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is more solo hero with child version of it than, you know, 4 or 5 guys in a van. But I can see those parallels.
Yeah.
I was surprised by the design of some of the droids. The IG unit I thought was cool, particularly the spinning around shooting stuff at the beginning.
Oh, I loved it.
The scene when they would flash back to the Mandalorian's childhood, some of the droids there almost looked like early kind of Cylon models from the reboot series.
I'll be honest, they flashed back to that a zillion times, and it wasn't until the final time that I realized his entire I won't be around droids was because the droid nearly killed him as a child.
Honestly, I hadn't even put that together. So yeah, I think they could have cleared that up.
Because that one droid was programmed to kill every living being in the village encountered.
And the funny thing is, it only would have taken a line or two of, instead of, when he's asked, what's your problem with droids? I have a problem with that droid was his answer. It should have been, I had a bad experience as a child.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a couple of ways they could have set that up a little better.
I mean, he has seen when he said, you know, droids are programmed to kill, and then they can't go against the programming. But
well, and when he was told the other one was programmed to be a nursemaid or whatever, it's like, I've had different experience.
Yeah.
But the line and the flashback were disconnected enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see where they were going with that, but it wasn't clear to me till you pointed it out.
Yeah. So for me, it was a struggle. And the only reason I finally put it together was because we saw the Mandalorian shoot the droid before it killed him, which is A, the only reason he survived, but B, the reason that he is so devout in I'm a Mandalorian, I believe the creed of the Mandalorian, etc.
They saved me, he buys in kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that was necessary. I was going to say mandatory, but that's a little too close of a word to Mandalorian.
Yeah.
But that really locks in the, is he ever going to abandon the child? It's like, no, he can't.
Well, and they really, I don't want to say mirrored, but they did some nice symmetry between seeing one of the other Mandalorians tell the one that rescued him, you know, get the foundling to safety, and then the guy takes a few steps and goes to the air with jetpack with him, and we see him looking back on the village as it gets small.
Yeah.
And then we see him at the very end, and he takes those few steps. Now that he has a jetpack, he goes to the air, and he's carrying the child, and we see the child looking back on the other two people in the lava field.
I appreciate how his armor got upgraded during the course of the series. His weaponry got upgraded. You know, he got the jetpack. He was leveling up during the show.
Yeah.
So I thought that worked.
I thought there were an awful lot of times the child got handed around, set down. First of all, if I ever need to hire a babysitter, I am not hiring the Mandalorian. I think a child psychologist could watch this series and do a hilarious podcast about all the trauma that the Mandalorian inflicted on that child.
Bad parenting advice as done by the Mandalorian.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the show a lot, but I'm just thinking,
if you think about it, this is one of the few times that parenthood and the parent-child relationship is really in the Star Wars saga, other than the obvious. Luke and Vader and all of that clearly is a precedent for it. But this is one of the few healthy relationships.
Yes, healthy. I'm going to take my child in its car seat to a Mudhorn battle.
He realized he couldn't leave it. He was between a rock and a hard place on that one. It was good that he brought the kid. I was expecting when they got back to the planet, though, to kind of use the baby as bait, that the baby carrier with the closing thing, that they were going to basically do a shell game and swap it out.
Yeah.
I was a little both pleased and disappointed that they didn't do that, but I was expecting it. And there were a couple of places where I thought they were going to go one way and they went another way, but never at a point where it's like, oh man, you blew it.
Mm.
And they had some good fight scenes. They had some good character moments.
Well, I think the best character moments for me, for the Mandalorian, were on the prison ship, where it's, he'll tear the droids apart, but he doesn't kill people just to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
And they really made that point there. We talked a little during the early episodes about, okay, it's one thing to go and get the kid and to say, you can't just shoot the kid because it's easier to take dead cargo back than live. But there was no bond at that point. And they kind of work to create the, I'm a foundling, he's a foundling, but even that's not an automatic bond. But it's, at what point do you say, I walked away and I can't?
Well, there were two competing concerns for the Mandalorian that arguably had been drilled into him since becoming one of them. And part of that was, you know, if you pick up a foundling, you've got to help them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened to us. We do it to other, you know, pass it forward kind of a thing. But then also the code of the bounty hunter, which seemed to be part and parcel at times of being a Mandalorian. Don't ask questions, see the job through, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the warring of the two until he's a foundling and he needs somebody to look after him, won out.
Yeah. Well, and when he was describing to the armorer, I can't claim the Mudhorn as my victory because my enemy helped me.
I loved how we got a callback to that later.
Yeah.
You know, that was good. I also liked how when he was in trouble protecting the child, the other Mandalorians broke their secrecy, came out very publicly to do that, much like they had, you know, when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And not to say they were in hiding there or whatever, but there are certain things that when it's, you're protecting a child, we've got your back on this. Mm-hmm. Even though at times they seem to not all be on the best terms with one another.
Yeah. Well, they were arguing about would only a coward take a job from someone who's former imperial.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, personal issues are set aside when it's, wait, we just heard he's fighting a mob to protect a foundling.
Yeah. Yeah. And the question is, how many other Mandalorians are out there on other planets? Is there some kind of a network that he can, you know, make use of?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this going to be, you know, the point at which we stop seeing other Mandalorians?
Yeah.
And they've got a rich universe to play in here. I loved how when we went to Mos Eisley, we saw the pit droids or whatever that we'd seen from the prequel trilogies, I think it was. Various races, you know, are seen from other shows and movies. And sometimes they dwell a little more on it, sometimes not so much. But I like how they've got the toys, they play with them, and they don't abuse them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I thought it was interesting in place of putting a cute droid in there, they went for the kid.
Yes.
It was a smart move. The question is, do we wind up with a droid later on?
Mm.
And if so, what type of droid and why?
Interestingly, I think because of what happened in this arc, if he found an IG that was a blank slate that he could program, I think he'd accept it.
I think so too. It's just a question of, are we going to see at some point another 3PO type, the R2 type, things like that? Do they consider some of what's happened in the comic books to be canon enough to pull in? Because some of the things we're seeing in this show, the vibroblade and some stuff like that, were from novels and stuff like that.
Interesting.
So if they've got ideas they like from other mediums, they're certainly willing to pull them in.
Yeah.
And do we see over the course of the show more about the New Republic?
Because
we don't see much of them, and what we see is not great.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we've got this homing beacon from a prison ship. Well, wherever we find it, we're going to blow it the hell up. Really? You know, that seemed a little odd.
Well, but they also saw that there was a ship that wasn't New Republic in the launch bay, armed to the gills, coming out at them. They had no idea that that was headed out to kill the Mandalorian.
Yeah. I don't know. That whole scene just seemed a little...
Yeah.
We're here. The thing's going off. We should blow it up.
Yeah.
But we'll see where they go with that. And it was surprising to me that nobody in the series, other than the armorer there at the end, even seemed to recognize the concept of the Force, Yoda's species, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, granted, not everyone knew Yoda in this universe. I get it. It's a colossally big universe. But this whole thing of the ancient Jedi and stuff. Well, Ben Kenobi, normal human, didn't die all that long ago.
Yeah.
So Jedi were around, you know, a generation or so back. So this whole ancient religion thing that comment we'd gotten in one of, the first Star Wars movie, and some of the vibe we get here, that's always kind of irked me a little with the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It would be like us referring to stuff from the World War II era as if it were, you know, mythical, like King Arthur's time.
Yeah.
So that I thought was a little weird. But certainly, I'm expecting a couple of things like the Moth and stuff like that to come back next season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to it. I thought it was a good show.
It was, yeah.
The 35 to 50 minute lengths were a little uneven, but give it the story the time it needs, no more, no less.
Well, and that's something that streaming allows for.
Yes. Well, and it balanced between being a 8-episode kind of book and 8 individual short stories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, there was definitely connections between them and payoffs, but each episode, again, like you said, had that payoff in and of itself.
Yeah.
So
you didn't feel obligated to sit down and watch them all at once, as if it were an 8-episode movie, if you will.
Yeah.
Or 8 chunks of a movie. And there have been some shows that we'll be watching, and they'll get to the end, and you're dangling off such a high cliff that it's, I know it's outrageously late. I know you have to go to work early in the morning, but I want off this cliff.
Well, there comes a point where some shows are telling one narrative over a really long period, and the episodic nature is so incidental that it is hard to kind of find a good pausing point.
Yeah.
Because the story just doesn't have that in its DNA, whereas here, I always wanted to go to the next, but it's not one of those of crap. You know, if we don't do it now, I'm going to lose the thread.
Yeah.
And to me, that was good writing.
Yes, definitely.
I do think having different directors for most episodes also kind of facilitated that.
Mm-hmm.
And having kind of callbacks and recurring characters versus kind of, you know, any sort of cliffhanger. I think the closest we ever came to that was probably the end of the first episode. I think kind of those first two formed the equivalent of a two-hour pilot to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, I think they worked individually fine, but the first one didn't have the, okay, and now we've told this story, you can just stop here.
Yeah.
Not to say all the episodes after that definitely had that, but they had more of it. So I'm curious if we're going to get mention of familiar faces and characters and stuff like that. See kind of where the dust settled on the New Republic or what have you, or where they really go, other than, obviously, the Mandalorian's got his mission now.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. Like to see some more familiar faces. I hope they can keep the quality up.
Me too.
But I didn't see anything here to make me think that they couldn't keep up either the writing quality or the production quality.
Mm-hmm. And I liked how they did the closing credits with what looked like storyboards.
Either storyboards or conceptual art.
Yeah.
But either way, it was really well done. It was generally great art.
Mm-hmm.
On the last one, there was one or two, like when they had the stormtroopers at the lava thing, where the posing of some of the stormtroopers in the art was a little stiff, but that's a nitpick. Overall, I thought it was a cool way to do the closing credits.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I just want someone, on behalf of all my friends who are parents, to go out and invent what I referred to as the car seat.
Floating baby carrier that just follows you around.
Yes. I think that was one of the best inventions. I think parents in their backs would love it.
Yeah. Definitely, I want to see how that evolves. And the smart thing about having the child be of Yoda's race that ages so slowly, they can keep him that way for years.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know at what point this kid gets past that, like, toddler stage.
I think he should have been, like, 20. Just saying.
I don't know. I hope they've got a game plan to explain 50 years in, how did the kid get where he was? Where did he come from? How did he get there? What's the backstory?
Why doesn't he talk? Not even out of order. Why doesn't he talk, period?
I'll chalk that up to just this is how the species ages. But how did the kid get there solo? Pardon the pun there. How did the kid get where he got with no other member of his race? What's going on? Are there other members of his race?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's surrounded by mercenaries who brought violence to a peaceful world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was he known about? What got the remains of the Empire after him?
Yeah.
There's a bigger story to be had there, and that's part of why I think that scientist doctor guy's got to come back to reveal that to the Mandalorian.
Yeah, I agree.
So, like I said, fun stuff. Good to finally have a live-action Star Wars TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Nope, that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.